So, are there many opportunities for budding young scientists? Well, plenty, as it turns out, if you listen to the kids who take part in national science competitions. And when I say kids, I really do mean it. 14, 15, and 16-year-olds who are making remarkable discoveries and inventing new technologies that could change our lives. Anne Strange-Champs talked with two finalists in the Siemens competition in math, science, and technology, Sarah Waliani and Caroline Lang. Anne talked first with Sarah, who entered the team competition with her cousin.
We did this work at City of Hope, and we actually were studying breast tumor cells. We found that breast tumor cells that contain a protein called TDARP will actually become resistant to the major drug called Herceptin. This is a major problem because 20 to 30% of breast tumor patients are being treated with Herceptin, and the fact that they might not even respond to this drug if they contain TDARP is a major issue.
Now, how did you happen to pick breast cancer drug resistance as a topic to work on?
Both of us have very close friends whose mothers have suffered from breast tumor, and so it's affected our lives on a more personal level. And so when I actually applied for an internship at City of Hope, I asked to actually do a project dealing with breast tumor cells.
Explain more about what is TDARP?
It's actually a neuronal protein. It plays a role in like neurotransmitter signaling pathways. And that was kind of what was interesting, is that what is this protein that's normally found in the brain, what is it doing in these breast tumor cells?
Sarah, at the time you and Shalina took this on, how old were you?
I actually was 15 and she was 16.
I'm so struck by your confidence. I'm wondering, you know, what made you think that two high school girls might find a solution to a problem that professional oncologists were stumped by?
Actually, science has been a passion of my entire life, so I don't really find it surprising that teenagers can do this kind of work. I think if you have the passion for it, I think actually a teenager can do anything with this kind of passion.
So when you were actually working with TDARP in the lab, what were you doing?
I actually had to create the TDARP DNA, and then I had to basically do different experiments called electrophoresis to make sure that the TDARP was properly constructed and that it didn't have mutations. And then when I knew I had my TDARP DNA, I was able to start working with tumor cells, and so I actually had to put the DNA into these cells to study them.
And what was your biggest breakthrough?
I will never forget that night, actually, when I remember it was still like 8 p.m. and I was in the lab, and I was going to get my final results to find out if these cells, if they actually were resistant to Herceptin now that they contain TDARP. And so when I found, I used a machine called a spectrophotometer, and when the reading came out and I saw that the cells were in fact surviving, that means that they actually were resistant to Herceptin. That was definitely the breakthrough, and I remember my mentor and I were both very excited about finding that our suspicion of TDARP was actually correct.
So what you discovered can actually be used in the real world and may really help save women's lives?
I think it can, because if unfortunate breast tumor patients, if they're not responding to Herceptin because they contain this TDARP, then we need to find a different type of therapy that could possibly be more effective. And we can also see if there's a possibility of maybe blocking TDARP's effect so that they might be able to respond more effectively to Herceptin.
So, Caroline, how about you? Tell me something about your work and how you got involved in the Siemens competition.
My team, I have two other team members, Naomi and Rebecca, and we did our project in my kitchen, actually, because we're three best friends that are homeschooled. And our work involved developing a video system to automatically measure burger doneness. We did this because in the past 8 years, over 500,000 individuals have become infected with E. coli 015787.
500,000? I didn't know it was that
yes.
many. So people are yeah. This is from people eating at fast food restaurants?
Yes, from ground beef. Ground beef is the number one cause. Some of the cases, I think 50,000 were from spinach and salad, but the majority were from ground beef cases. So that's where we got the idea to start this project.
And what made you even think about food poisoning as an issue to begin with?
Naomi works in a fast food restaurant. She's a cashier there, but she noticed that at her restaurant they use temperature probes to check the temperature of the burgers, and they only check a couple of the burgers, not even all of them, and they use the same temperature probe, so there's a risk of cross-contamination. So if only one burger was contaminated, the whole bunch would be contaminated.
Did Naomi come home from the fast food restaurant where she works and say, oh, gross, they're not even checked?
Yes, exactly. As part of our background research, we interviewed people in multiple fast food restaurants, and we found that only one of them was following the USDA guidelines. So it was just really scary what we found, and we found that something needed to be done about it.
So same question to you. You know, you discovered that this is a major food safety issue in an enormous multi-billion dollar industry. What made you think three teenage girls could take it on?
We knew we didn't have a lot of resources because we're homeschooled and we worked in our kitchen, but we just started it as a fun thing to do.
And you were how old at the time?
It was in ninth grade, so we were 14 and 15. And so we just thought, you know, why not try it? And it turned out really well, so.
So tell me what you did.
So we designed a video system that would hang above the grill of burgers, and it measures the shrinkage of the burgers while the burgers are cooking. And when the burgers have reached a certain size, it will tell the cook that the burgers are done, and then the cook will take them off. And this works because we found that shrinkage correlates with internal temperature. So when a burger reaches a certain size, it's safe internal temperature.
So you found a whole different way to measure the temperature of a burger, not using an old-fashioned thermometer and actually sticking it in the middle of the burger, but just looking at how much it was shrinking?
Exactly, yes. The problem with all methods today is that they touch the burger, and this causes cross-contamination, and it's also expensive because you have to buy a separate temperature probe for each burger so there's no cross-contamination, and that's when we knew something had to be invented.
What was your biggest breakthrough?
We cooked hundreds and hundreds of burgers, and it seemed like there was never going to be an end, and finally when we developed one system to measure the temperature so that we could correlate that temperature with shrinkage, we finally got good data. We put it on a graph in Excel. It fit what we needed, and it was just like an epiphany. It was amazing.
Is there any chance this could actually be used by restaurants in the fast food industry?
There's a great chance. We contacted six fast food restaurants and also the USDA, and they all expressed interest in our idea. So it's definitely something that could be implemented with a little bit more work.
Wow. So by the time you've reached the end of your teenage years, you may have a patent.
Yeah, we're hoping maybe that could come true. That would be amazing. But yeah.
The three of you are homeschooled, right? Was it, I'm curious about, you know, you didn't have the advantage of labs in a high school with lots of equipment and stuff. Was that a disadvantage for you, being interested in science?
Well, I just think that made us stronger because we had to work through so many problems with the budget because we didn't have expensive lab equipment. We didn't have a mentor with a lot of background in our area. It was just my mom who helped us. So we had to engineer all our own equipment. So I think it was a good thing. It helped us bond as a team working through all these obstacles.
Hmm. So I'm curious, to the two of you, what would you say, especially to other girls? Because I know, you know that there's been attention from science educators and math educators over the last several years, you know, real concern that girls especially drop out of science and math early. This obviously hasn't been the case for you and for your teammates. Why do you think that hasn't been the case? What is it about science or about you that kept you involved?
I think that science fair is, I've been doing science fair since kindergarten. I think that's what my key role was, because science textbooks, I mean, they're boring. That's all you can say about them. They're just boring. But science fair, when you actually get your hands on the work and are actually doing it for yourself, it's just an incredible experience. And it's just sparked my interest since I was young.
I've been also doing projects actually in my backyard, because when I was 12, I couldn't actually get access to a lab. And so I started to do lettuce projects in my backyard, trying to increase the vitamin C content. And I think that if you sometimes just reading books, it's not really so interesting because you're just reading what other people have found. But if you're actually going to do experiment on your own and design your own hypothesis and try and test things that you know are important, then I think that it can actually make science a lot more interesting.
Sarah Wellianni and Caroline Lang, two of the finalists in the Siemens competition in math, science, and technology. They talked with Anne Strainchamps.